50 years marching Alabama. Was just in Columbus, Ohio, teaching little kids. South by Southwest in Austin, teaching sampling. At gynecologists, I do a lot of interviews. And I'm making some nice figures like a gym or two. And like Sandra Bland, my band be changing lanes without a signal at all. Now you.
Welcome to the Michael Imhotep Show right here on the Empowerment Radio Network. Today is Tuesday, January 3rd, 2017. And we are live today. We have a lot to talk about. Very, very busy day today. Shout out to the people watching us on Facebook Live. Also, our Facebook fan page, The African History Network. The African History Network. Shout out to the people watching us there as well. We're going to continue our discussion dealing with those who we lost in 2007. You know, yesterday we talked about Dr. Francis Cress Welsing. We talked about Prince. We talked about Muhammad Ali. And we ran out of time because I shared an excerpt of an interview I did from May of 2014 with Dr. Francis Cress Welsing. I'm going to share an excerpt of an interview with Prince. Now, I didn't do the interview with Prince, which I had. I wish I did do that interview with Prince, but it's an interview that Tavis Smiley did with Prince. So we're going to share an excerpt of that. We're going to talk about some other people who we lost in 2016. Also, Maurice White of Earth, Wind, and Fire. There were so many people. Natalie Cole as well at the beginning of last year. Okay, and then I want to talk about what's behind the increase in the numbers of police being killed. We saw a 56% increase in the number of police officers who were shot and killed in 2016 over 2015. Now, most of them were shot and killed by white males, but that's not really talked about. When they talk about some of the reasons, they talk about tensions between the communities and they talk about anti-police rhetoric. But what I find very interesting is that they don't come out and talk about crazy ass white men who shot and killed police officers. So we're gonna talk about that a little bit, because over the last few days, the report came out. I know there was a big article by NBC News on December 29th. Which was December 29th was a Thursday. I know December 29th. And a lot of this got lost because of the holidays. It got lost on people because of the holidays, things like this, right? We're going to talk about that a little bit today. Tomorrow we're going to get into the discussion about Chicago and almost 800 murders. I think it was 762 murders in 2015 in Chicago. We're going to get to that tomorrow because I have a lot of information dealing with that. And I've been keeping up with the news even when I was out of town, even when I was at Kwanzaa events. So because we were only on the air one day last week, live, Thursday, there are a lot of topics I want to cover before too much time gets away, okay? And then you have a story about an African-American billionaire, Roger Smith, African-American billionaire, who has agreed to pay for the education of the Nigerian schoolgirls who were abducted by Boko Haram. Okay, he has agreed to pay for their education. Okay, so that's a great story, great thing that he's doing also. Okay. All right, so we'll talk about that as well. All right, now on the Michael Imhotep Show, we focus on educating, empowering, and inspiring people of African descent throughout the diaspora and around the world, because right knowledge corrects wrong behavior. What you do for yourself, what you do to yourself, and what you allow other people to do to you is based upon what you think about yourself. What you think about yourself is based upon what you have been taught about yourself. What you have been taught about yourself is based upon everything you've read, heard, and seen about yourself. So when you control the radius of a man's thoughts, you can control the circumference of his actions, because the mind can't do or teach what it doesn't know. Now, we deal with a number of different topics here on the show. We deal with current events and history and politics, education, economic empowerment, entrepreneurship, relationships, love, sex, health issues, and much, much more. Sign up for our email newsletter. Text the word Kemet, K-E-M-E-T. Text the word Kemet, K-E-M-E-T, to 22828 to sign up for our email newsletter. Also, go to our website, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. Sign up for our email newsletter there at our website, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. We should be sending one out this evening, okay? Hopefully, you all liked the show yesterday and liked the excerpt of my interview I did with Dr. Francis Kress Wilson. We know yesterday, January 2nd, was the anniversary of the passing of Dr. Francis Kress Wilson. She was 80 years old. She passed away January 2nd, 2016, after having a major stroke. Okay. So yesterday, go back and listen to the podcast of the show. It was uploaded. You can listen to all the podcasts at AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. You can listen to all the podcasts of the shows there. And a lot of people really enjoyed the excerpt that they heard. We have the full interview as well. And also I talked about the article that I wrote about my interview with Dr. Francis Kress Wilson as well. Okay, so you can check that out also. All right. Now follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, TuneIn.com, and Periscope. And Michael M. Hotep, I-M-H-O-T-E-P. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, TuneIn.com, and Periscope. And Michael M. Hotep, I-M-H-O-T-E-P. And on our Facebook fan page, The African History Network, The African History Network as well. Okay. All right. So shout out to everybody watching us on Facebook. Andrea Rivera said Happy New Year. Happy New Year to you too as well. Who else we have here? Let's see, Freddie Santiago. He said, "Peace, my brother. Glad to see, hear light minds out there. Much needed, absolutely." Jeremiah Clayton, how you doing? Sheldon Flood and Zinga Masani Manuel in Detroit, how you doing, sister? Corey Adams, Joyce Glaspie. Just a few of the people watching us. So if you're watching on Facebook, share this broadcast on your own Facebook page and invite your friends to tune in also. Okay, so yesterday we started out the new year. Yesterday was our first show of the new year. And we started out remembering some of those that we lost in 2016, okay? And we're going to talk a little bit about that today. And we're going to continue this week. It's just so much information to cover, so much going on. Donald Trump's ignorant ass tweeting, attacking auto manufacturers, all types of nonsense. But April 22nd, 2009, Tavis Smiley interviewed Prince, okay? And here's an excerpt of the interview. And you know, Prince was, he read a lot. He studied history. He studied Dr. John Henrik Clark. He studied ancient Kemet, etc. Okay? Here's a clip, and Prince is showing another side of himself.
I want to go back to Jack Johnson because he's still in the back of my head. I can't get him out of my head where this conversation is concerned. Who have you felt most often like in the ring fighting the record industry? Like Jack or the opponent?
Oh, like Jack.
Like Jack?
Yeah.
Tell me why.
Well, because I knew I was right. Mm-hmm. You know, we talked about this in our very first interview and conversation together. It's obvious now that artists are supposed to own their master recordings. I mean, in the future, it'll be unconscionable to even think you can take somebody's creation and claim ownership of it. See, unfortunately, this discussion's going to start to barrel into a discussion about the human genome and the DNA and all the rest of it. When it gets there, then we're going to be in the deep water. Mm-hmm. See, so it's better to start the conversation now before we get into God talk, you know?
Mm. There are four songs that I want to ask you about, and I did what I have never done before, which is to actually print these lyrics out Some of them, I'm since the record is so new, I'm learning some of them. I got some of them memorized.
Who gave you the lyrics, though? I've seen some really strange rewrites of my stuff. Well, I've seen one time they said the lyrics to When Doves Cry was, dig, if you will, the picture of me, Marvin Gaye, and the kids.
Yeah. Well, you
and
know
there,
what?
And then there was another one. This person will go unnamed.
Yes.
She didn't speak the English language too good.
Right.
She had a really cute daughter, so that's why we was acquaintances.
Yeah.
But she swore up and down, Little Red Corvette was pay the rent, collect.
Yeah. Well, you know what?
So you need to let me check that.
Yeah. You know, I'm a fast learner. So I'm not going to read none of these on the air. I'm just going to ask you about the songs and about the lyrical content. And for those who don't have the record, you can go to lotusflower.com and get it and follow along at home. Even if you're 2 or 3 days late, you can play this back and follow along. In no particular order, since we mentioned Dreamer first, tell me about Dreamer.
Oh, well, when I saw the State of the Black Union, Dick Gregory really moved me and a lot of my friends. I show it to everybody that comes over the house, especially white folks, because they need to hear that, you know, so that they know more about all of us, because what he said affects all of us. He said something that really hit home about this phenomena of chemtrails. And, you know, when I was a kid, I used to see these trails in the sky all the time. And so that's cool. A jet just went over. And then you started to see a whole bunch of them.
All right, we have to pause right there. We're coming up on a break. We're on break. Hey, you listen to the Michael Imhotep Show right here on the Empowerment Radio Network with Knowledge is Power. You don't want to miss 1 minute. We have a lot of information to cover and not a lot of time to do it in. And we haven't one moment to lose. So we'll be back in a few minutes. Hey, share this broadcast on your own Facebook page. Invite your friends to tune in. We're going to continue with this clip here. This was an interview from April 22nd, 2009. Tavis Smiley did with the one and only Prince. We're remembering some of those that we lost in 2016. We have a lot of information to cover, not a lot of time to do it in, and we haven't one moment to lose.
Batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
You're ready to move out.
All right. So, all right. We'll be back from break in just a minute. Hey, visit our website, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. We have a lot of information there for you. All of my DVD presentations are there. I have about 30 DVD lectures. Two of my latest lectures I did in December. December 17th, I did Ancient Kemet, the Winter Solstice, and the History of Christmas. Ancient Kemet. Kemet is one of the original names for Egypt. Ancient Kemet, the Winter Solstice, and the History of Christmas. So we deal with the history of Christmas. We go back to the pre-Christian era. We deal with festivals like the Festival of Saturnalia, Festivals of Mithra. A lot of information there. We deal with the tie-in to Ancient Kemet, a lot of history and mythology coming out of Ancient Kemet as well. Then on December 27th at the Charles H. Wright Museum of African American History, I did my presentation dealing with rebellion movements among African people during slavery, after slavery. It's called In Glock We Trust. G-L-O-C-K, and Glock We Trust, The Ballot and the Bullet, How African People Fought Against Oppression Through Armed Resistance, Voting Rights, and Redistributing the Pain Through Economic Withdrawal. Okay, so they're both available at AfricanHistoryNetwork.com, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. Well, hey, it's the new year, and it's time to start the new year off right and invest in the future of your family with life insurance today. Contact Yolanda Spivey of the Whitney Insurance Agency at 201-880-7179. 201-880-7179. Also visit their website, mwhitney.com. whitney.com, mwhitney.com, W-H-I-T-N-E-Y. Or also visit theblackinsurancenetwork.com, theblackinsurancenetwork.com as well. We know that too many African Americans die and pass on debt to their children and not assets. And this is what, this is one of the main themes of the documentary's Black Friday. It talks about creating generational, intergenerational wealth for our children. Master P, we're all familiar with Master P and his son Romeo and his daughter Symphonique. Master P, who created No Limit Records, he inherited $10,000 from a life insurance policy left to him by his grandfather, and he turned that into a $250 million empire. A $250 million empire. Are you going to leave assets for your loved ones, or are you going to leave debt for your loved ones? Okay? Contact Yolanda Spivey today at the Whitney Insurance Agency, 201-880-7179, 201-880-7179. Also visit mwhitney.com, mwhitney.com. And you can also visit theblackinsurancenetwork.com, theblackinsurancenetwork.com also. All right. Welcome back to the Michael M. Hotep Show right here on the Empowerment Radio Network, where knowledge is power. Let's go back to this clip here. Now, this is from April 22nd, 2009. The one and only Prince was interviewed by Tavis Smiley. And they talked about a number of different things. This is an excerpt of the interview. I think on PBS you could find the original interview. Okay. Let's go back to this clip.
These trails in the sky all the time. And so that's cool. A jet just went over. And then you started to see a whole bunch of them. And the next thing you know, everybody in your neighborhood was fighting and arguing and you didn't know why. Okay. And you really didn't know why. I mean, everybody was fighting. So he started riffing about the chemtrails. And he started to say things that hit home so hard. And I would recommend that everybody try to get what he said online or wherever and try to get a copy of it and just listen to it. Because I was so moved that I had to write the song.
And then when you leave, with all the hassle, can you have that love?
Love.
I'm so tired of you black folks walking around looking all evil like that's going to change something. Looking all mean and talking all crazy. Let them tell you about your children. If I sit here today, and these are all white folks, and they're putting some sleeping pill in my water. And I sit up here and doze off and go to sleep, and everybody told in the world, niggas is lazy. They tired. No, that's because you too naive enough to know what they putting in my water. Okay? Your children ain't violent because they black. They ain't violent. Most people in the world live in a ghetto. They don't kill people. What are you putting in my malt liquor, white boy? What are you putting in? Huh? Hear me. And it's your fault too. Malt liquor is made by white companies, but only sold in black neighborhoods, and you ain't checked it to see what's in it. Huh? How much lead are you putting in my neighborhood? Lead affects my thinking capacity. Lead, there's only one thing on the planet more dangerous than lead, and that's manganese. Manganese will make you kill your mama. And let me tell y'all something. If you want to see the largest homicide rate in the world, it ain't in no black ghetto in America. It's a little town in Australia where them white folks' homicide rate is 200 times what their population is. And that town just happened to be located across the street from a manganese.
Sit back down, Dick. Don't lose that mic. Yeah.
That town is located across the street from a manganese plant. How much manganese are you spraying in my neighborhood at night while I'm asleep? How in the world can a 9-year-old child find a heroin man but the FBI can't find it, and you gonna tell me that's a black thing? Y'all crazy? What is this about? These are the things that need to change while this brother and sister's on their way to the White House. And when you see Hillary and y'all see Brother Barack, thank him for me. And you white folks need to be thankful. Because if y'all had a brother like me, y'all would really be in trouble. That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right. Okay?
Ladies and gentlemen, Dick Gregory. Dick Gregory.
I was so moved that I had to write the song. The other thing is the first line of the song says I was born on the same plantation in the United States of the red, white, and blue. And we live in a place now that feels just about like a plantation. We're all indentured servants, you know. When I found out there were 8 presidents before George Washington, I wanted to smack somebody. Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted to know why I was taught otherwise. Just tell me the whole story. I'll fill in the blanks. But don't tell me something that you think I'm supposed to know.
We're indentured servants and we got a black president now?
Well, I don't vote. I have nothing to do with it. I got no dog in that race.
And for those who would cuss me out and slap me in person if I didn't ask you why?
Well, the reason why is because I'm one of Jehovah's Witnesses, and we've never voted. And that's not to say that I don't think Barack Obama, President Obama, is a very smart individual, and he seems like he means well. Prophecy is what we all have to go by now.
All right, so that was an excerpt of an interview that Tavis Smiley did April 22nd, 2009 with the one and only Prince Rogers Nelson, okay? And in that clip, they referenced one of the State of the Black Unions, and I saw all 10 of the State of the Black Unions on C-SPAN, and this was organized by Tavis Smiley. And you heard Dick Gregory talking, and he said he was talking about lead and how lead affects the brain. Well, there was an article from AtlantaBlackStar.com December 21st, 2016. And there's so much, you know, like I said, we had so much to cover because we only broadcasted one day live last week. But I'm doing research all day, even tied up with Kwanzaa, even out of town. A new study reveals that 3,000 neighborhoods across the United States have higher lead levels than Flint, Michigan. It looks like Flint, Michigan isn't the only U.S. city experiencing a lead contamination crisis. Now, when I interviewed Zaza Ali last year sometime, well, I think she was at Nandy's Knowledge Cafe early in 2016, and we interviewed her here on the show. We were talking about Flint, Michigan, but she was saying that there were other cities that were dealing with lead contamination also. And as time went on, more information started coming out about that. Okay. And I was familiar with that then, but as time went on, more information came out about other cities. There was one city in Ohio, if I remember correctly, that's dealing with lead contamination. Flint, Michigan really blew the lid off of this, right? So it says it looks like Flint, Michigan isn't the only city experiencing a lead contamination crisis. In fact, a new investigative report suggests that there are thousands of communities across the nation with lead levels twice as high as those found in Flint, Michigan, and residents are not even aware of it. Okay? Now we know that in Baltimore, has a history of lead contamination. And if you go back and if you listen to the podcast that we did dealing with how companies, let me see, when do we do this podcast? I'll find it for you. But we dealt with how companies, how corporations make billions of dollars off of lead poisoned African Americans, okay? And it was a huge article from the Washington Post, okay? And I'm going to see if I can find it. Was it millions? Let me see. It was a huge article from the Washington Post. Well, oh, here we go. How companies make millions off lead poisoned poor blacks. Okay, we did this story in August of 2016. I did a big show about this. The show was podcasted. It was right around the end of August, right around August 25th, August 26th. Because this big story, this is an expose from Washington Post written by Terrence McCoy. It's called How Companies Make Millions Off Lead Poisoned Poor Blacks. And what this article dealt with is how you have, when you have somebody who suffers from lead poisoning, like they live in a house or live in an apartment building and their lead paint chips, etc. This article dealt with that. The parents will then sue the owners of the building. Okay. Well, usually when they win and they get a financial settlement, they usually don't get a lump sum settlement. They usually get what's called a structured settlement. So they get a certain number of payments over a certain number of years, 20 years, 30 years. They get monthly payments over a certain number of years, a certain amount of dollars. Sometimes at different increments, the payments will increase in value or increase in the amount that's being paid out, right? So you have other companies that will then buy these structured settlements from people, and they'll pay them anywhere from 9 cents to 33 cents on the dollar that the total amount of the structured settlement is valued at. So what's happening is you're having a lot of these structured settlement companies, and they dealt with this extensively in the article. And one of them, they named by name, is called Access Funding. Okay. So you'll have companies, they'll contact people who have structured settlements. But these people are suffering from lead poisoning, and lead poisoning impairs your cognitive skills. Some people to the point where they can't take care of themselves. They have to have a caregiver take care of them, and they don't have the cognitive skills to be able to read and decipher the contract that's being sent to them. And they're signing off on things and signing away their structured settlement, which is for 20 or 30 years, and getting a lump sum check that's 9 cents to 33 cents on the dollar. And you have companies that are making millions of dollars off of this. This is what this article is about. So the ramifications of lead poisoning are widespread. But we're on commercial break. When we come back from the break, we'll go back to we'll talk a little bit more about this article. Then we're going to talk about some more people who we lost in 2013. But that clip of Prince goes right into this current story, and AtlantaBlackStar.com had an article about this. I haven't seen this talked about a lot in other news outlets, but this is extremely important. Okay, a new study has identified 3,000 neighborhoods across the U.S. that have higher lead levels than Flint, Michigan. You listen to the Michael M. Hotep Show right here on the Empowerment Radio Network, where knowledge is power. Mary Lorraine said, put a link to the article. All right, just a second. Okay. All right, so be sure to visit our website, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. We have a lot of information there for you. Recommend a reading list of books. All of my DVD presentations are there. I just shipped out some orders today on the way in. That's one of the reasons why I was late. I had to run errands, get some flyers printed up also. I'm doing a presentation coming up Saturday, January 14th at the Jungle Juice Bar. Saturday, January 14th at the Jungle Juice Bar. The Distortion of the Legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., the Revolutionary, will not be televised. The Distortion of the Legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., the Revolutionary, will not be televised. And I'm also going to do a presentation on Malcolm X as well. Malcolm X, 5 decades later, why is he still relevant? Okay, so I'm going to do two presentations that day. This is at the Jungle Juice Bar located at 14929 Charlevoix Street in Detroit. 14929 Charlevoix Street in Detroit. And this is in Grosse Pointe Park, Michigan. I'm sorry, it's not Detroit. It's Grosse Pointe Park, Michigan, which is right across the street from Detroit. Literally across the street from Detroit. Free event, donations accepted. Saturday, January 14th, 2017, 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. at the Jungle Juice Bar. I'm going to do two presentations there. The first one, The Distortion of the Legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., the Revolutionary, will not be televised. So we've heard the revolution will not be televised, but Gil Scott-Heron, this is the revolutionary, will not be televised because the revolutionary Dr. King is not shown to us on the television. Okay? They show us the emasculated Dr. King. They show us the We Shall Overcome, but they don't show us the revolutionary Dr. King who was talking about economic empowerment, who was against the Vietnam War, etc. Okay? The Dr. King who was hiring the Deacons for Defense and Justice to protect the Deacons for Defense and Justice. They were armed. They were protecting civil rights workers. They only deal with one aspect of Dr. King. Okay, so we're going to deal with the revolutionary Dr. King. Then we'll also deal with Malcolm X 5 decades later. Why is he still relevant? So I'm doing two presentations at the Jungle Juice Bar that day. Okay, we'll have the flyer at our website, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com, today. Okay, we'll have it up there. All right. Okay. On Facebook, Michael Long said, your show is great as always. I'm driving around at work. Lots of dead zones. So I watch again, but loving this knowledge. Now, we're also broadcasting on the Empowerment Radio Network. So you can download the TuneIn Radio app and search for Empowerment Radio Network, Empowerment Radio Network, or go to TuneIn.com, T-U-N-E, TuneIn.com, and search for Empowerment Radio Network. And, you know, you can listen on your smartphone through the TuneIn Radio app, okay? You can do that also. All right, in case there's a problem with Facebook Live. And we'll have this show podcasted this evening at AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. Listen to all the podcasts there. Okay, Lorraine Huff said, candy and ice cream trucks peddling candy and toys which contain high levels of lead. What contains high level? You're talking about the toys contain high levels of lead. You're not saying the ice creams, but you're saying the toys that they give away have high levels of lead. Okay. Jamila J.P. Perez Robinson said, right to Lorraine. She agrees. Lorraine Huff said, Jamila, let's not forget about flea markets. Jamila also said that's why there's a Family Dollar on every corner in black and poor neighborhoods. Some of their products and merchandise, toys, jewelry, etc., have high toxic and lead levels. All right. Okay. And A. Cosmo said Mexican from Mexico don't drink. Don't drink our water. They come to America with this knowledge. Not exactly sure what you're saying. Bulldog for Life said, Happy New Year, brother. What are you, a Q? Happy New Year to you as well. Wendell Olden, Happy New Year. Happy New Year to everybody. Sabrina Lorick, peace to you also, sister. How you doing? Rich Law is watching from Stuttgart, Germany. Okay. Lakeem Muhammad, peace and power, black family. Peace to you. All right. Okay. So let's go back to let's go back to this article quickly here. This is from December 21st, 2016, just a couple weeks ago. Okay. Or last week. What was that? A couple weeks ago. Study reveals 3,000 neighborhoods across the U.S. have higher lead levels than Flint, Michigan. Okay. Now, the study was conducted by Reuters and identified close to 3,000 areas in the U.S. with much higher lead levels than Flint, Michigan, which is, you know, in Michigan, which and Flint, Michigan suffered a crippling water crisis when officials switched the water system and began sourcing water from the highly contaminated Flint River in 2014. And this call led from aging pipes to leach into the water supply. The reason why was because the water in the Flint River was 19 times more corrosive than the water coming from the Detroit water source, from the Detroit plant. Okay. And when the water went through the lead pipes, now all of the pipes in Flint, Michigan are not lead, about 50% are. But when it went, when the water that was 19 times more corrosive than the previous water they were using, when it went through the lead pipes, it stripped away a protective coating that was inside of the lead pipes that kept the lead from leaching into the water. Now, residents of Flint, Michigan have suffered a number of health issues over the past 2 years and are still forced to rely on bottled water and or home water filters for daily tasks like cooking and bathing. A report issued by Michigan State's Department of Health and Human Services in June of 2016 revealed that 3.4% of the state's youngest residents tested for lead poisoning had higher than normal levels of lead, which the CDC thresholds at five micrograms per deciliter or higher, 5 micrograms per deciliter or higher, in their bloodstreams in 2015. Okay, so 3.4% of Flint of Michigan's youngest residents tested for lead poisoning had higher than normal levels of lead in their system. Okay, now residents in certain pockets of the country have not fared much better, according to a Reuters new report. The study revealed that more than 1,100 of the 3,000 communities found to have double the lead poisoning rates of those recorded at the peak of the Flint water crisis also had rates of elevated blood lead tests that were roughly 4 times higher than those found in Flint, Michigan. Okay, the new study from Reuters revealed that more than 1,100 of the 3,000 communities were found to have double the lead poisoning rates of those recorded at the peak of the Flint water crisis, and they also had rates of elevated blood lead tests that were roughly 4 times higher than those found in Flint, Michigan. Yeah, 1,100 neighborhoods across the U.S. dealing with this condition right now. Now, some of those communities included Warren, Pennsylvania, a city where 36% of youth tested had higher than normal blood lead levels, an area of Goat Island, Texas, Goat, G-O-A-T, Goat Island, Texas, where nearly a quarter of blood tests show lead poisoning, and small areas throughout Baltimore, Cleveland, and Philadelphia, according to the Reuters report. And remember, we just talked about Baltimore, because when you read this article from the Washington Post, written by Terrence McCoy, August 25th, 2016, entitled "How Companies Make Millions Off Lead Poison Poor Blacks," this talks about how Baltimore is ravaged by this. And the another thing that a lot of people may not know or have forgotten is that Freddie Gray and his siblings were victims of lead poisoning, and they got a settlement because they were living in a structure. It was either an apartment or a house at the time, and they suffered from lead poisoning, and it impaired their cognitive skills. So they got a structured settlement as well. But this is something, and they talked about how Baltimore is one of the top cities for companies that buy structured settlements. Baltimore is one of the top cities for them to target. Okay, now, so you have Goat Island, Texas, where nearly one quarter of blood tests show lead poisoning in small areas throughout Baltimore. You have Cleveland and Philadelphia. Now, the news organization Reuters used previously compiled data from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention from 21 states over the past decade for its analysis and uncovered 2,600 census tracts and another 278 zip code areas with a prevalence of lead 2 times higher than Flint, Michigan's. The study noted that many of these neighborhoods are plagued by quote-unquote legacy lead that's left behind by deteriorating lead paint and industrial waste, among other things. So what you're really dealing with is what's also called environmental racism. Okay? Environmental racism. Now, only is the increased presence of lead a mounting concern, but also the variety of health issues caused by prolonged exposure to the metal. According to the World Health Organization, the WHO, W-H-O, the World Health Organization, not the old rock band, the WHO, but the World Health Organization, high levels of lead in the body can lead to neurological issues, coma due to attacks on the central nervous system, and even death. Okay, neurological issues, it can lead to coma due to attacks on the central nervous system, and high exposure to high levels of lead can kill you as well. Now, the study mentioned that children exposed to the smallest amounts of lead may also suffer a reduced IQ and stunted growth and development. These risks become even more concerning in areas where kids go untested for lead poisoning. Now, the disparities found between different areas have stark implications, said Dr. Helen Egger, who is the chair of child and adolescent psychiatry at New York University, okay, at their medical center's child study center, okay. She said, quote, where lead poisoning remains common, many children will have developmental delays and start out behind all the rest. Where lead poisoning remains common, many children will have developmental delays and start out behind all the rest, end quote. Now, though the public remains largely unaware of communities besides Flint, Michigan, that are suffering a lead contamination crisis, the report noted that there's not much federal help available for communities whose lead issues are known. There's not much federal help available for communities whose lead issues are known. After 2 long years, Congress only recently approved a $170 million bill that will provide funding to repair the city's lead-stricken water system. That amount is almost 10 times the CDC's annual budget for assisting states with lead poisoning, according to the report. Now, Robert Walker is an epidemiologist, and he's the co-chair of the CDC's Center for Disease and Control, the CDC's lead content work group. He told Reuters, he said, quote, I hope this data spurs questions from the public to community leaders who can make changes. I hope this data spurs questions from the public to community leaders who can make changes. I would think that it would turn some heads. Okay, so check out this article. This is from AtlantaBlackStar.com. December 21st, 2016, study reveals 3,000 neighborhoods across U.S. have higher lead levels than Flint, Michigan. Study reveals 3,000 neighborhoods across U.S. have higher lead levels than Flint, Michigan. Okay. Hey, if you want to advertise with the African History Network, please email us at customerservice@AfricanHistoryNetwork.com, customerservice@AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. Okay. We reach thousands of people on a daily basis. And if you want to market your business, your organization, your upcoming event, etc. If you want to bring me in to do a presentation for your group or organization, visit theblackspeakers.com/Michael M. Hotep, I-M-H-O-T-E-P, theblackspeakers.com/Michael M. Hotep, okay? If you want to bring me in to do a presentation for your group or organization. All right, so welcome back to the Michael M. Hotep Show right here on the Empowerment Radio Network, where knowledge is power. And we just finished talking about this article dealing with lead poisoning, okay? And when we interviewed when I interviewed Zaza Ali last year sometime, she talked about how it's not just Flint, Michigan that is dealing with lead poisoning, okay? And you have about 1,100 neighborhoods that have been identified, and their lead poisoning level is twice as high as Flint, Michigan, at the height of the Flint water crisis. Okay. All right. So shifting gears here, you know, we've been covering, we've talked some late last year about the numbers of police officers who were shot and killed in the line of duty, right? And there was a study that came out late December that talked about how there was a 56% increase in the number of police officers who were shot and killed, okay? And you had 64 officers who were shot and killed in the line of duty in 2016, 56% increase over 2015, according to the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund, okay? Now, what's interesting is what's not talked about is that the majority of people who kill police officers are not Black Lives Matter activists. They're not African Americans at all. The majority of people who kill police officers are crazy white men. But that's not really talked about. Let's go to this clip here from December 29th from Morning Joe, MSNBC. The city of Chicago is stepping up plans to equip police officers with body cams a year ahead of schedule, with all officers having body cams by the end of the year. Let me see. Is this the right clip? This may not be the right clip that I want. Let me see something here. Okay, we'll go to this one anyway, because we're going to talk about Chicago tomorrow.
Welcome back to Morning Joe. The Chicago Police Department is fast-tracking a program to equip every officer with a body camera. Originally, the city had planned to have every officer wearing a camera by the end of 2018, but Mayor Rahm Emanuel now says the plan will go into effect a year ahead of schedule. The news comes as Chicago's murder rate surges. Police say more than 750 people have been killed in the city in 2016. That's a 58% increase over last year. 2016 also a particularly deadly year for American policing, with a big spike in the number of officers killed in the line of duty. MSNBC chief legal correspondent Ari Melber has a special report for NBCNews.com on this sharp rise, and he joins us now. Ari, good morning. Epidemic on both sides. We can talk about Chicago more generally in a minute, but let's talk about what you found with officers.
Yeah, a lot of controversies in policing this year. What we did for a special MSNBC NBC News report was speak to families of officers killed in the line of duty this year. Those killings are up, we can tell you. According to the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund, 64 people shot and killed in the line of duty this year. That's up from 41 last year. So year over, that's a 50%+ increase. And the ambush attacks that have gotten so much attention, we can tell you now, looking at the end of the year, the data shows those are up too. 21 officers targeted and killed for being officers, up from 6 in the prior year. The families we spoke to say that adds a special kind of extra pain, because so many people in these police communities feel that their officers, their family members, their loved ones are being targeted. They always knew they'd be in the line of fire. They would be taking a risk. But the idea that they're being targeted for the uniform they wear. I want to share one story among those that we covered. This was of an officer in Baton Rouge, Montrell Jackson. He posted to Facebook a plea for people to come together, for officers and protesters to come together. And he said, I swear to God, I love this city, but I wonder if this city loves me. In uniform, I get nasty, hateful looks, and out of uniform, some consider me a threat. Please don't let hate infect your heart. This city must and will get better. That's part of a moving post he wrote on Facebook. 9 days later, he was shot and killed in this ambush attack. One of the many heartbreaking stories. His widow, his wife, Trenisha Jackson, we spoke to her about it. Here's what she said shortly after his death about his Facebook post.
Although his life was cut short, Corporal Montrell Jackson was able to make his final request known to the world. He asked that we not let hate infect our hearts.
For this report, we spoke again as a follow-up to Trenisha. She didn't want to appear further on camera, but she was willing to speak to us by phone. And one of the things she said is there are days where she feels discouraged, doesn't feel like going on. Anyone who's been through the loss of a family member could understand a day like that. And she said she goes back, she rereads his post. She says that kind of courage, which he showed not only in asking everyone to come together, but what he lived every day in his job, is what makes her want to go on.
The other incident, of course, that jumps out at you was Dallas. Back in July, 12 officers shot, 5 of them killed. As you looked into this problem, Ari, what accounts for it? Why is it spiking? It feels like there's a, by these deranged people, that suddenly it's okay somehow to go up and shoot an officer. What's going on here?
Well, I was down in Dallas for this report on Monday, and I spoke to Patrick Zamarripa's mother, his brother, and his sister. He was one of the 5 officers targeted and killed there. By the way, he also did 3 tours in Iraq before coming home to meet that fate. The stories pile up. I will tell you what experts told us. We spoke to people in law enforcement who are concerned that they feel there is a demonization, that there is a type of attacks in rhetoric that can spread. And so we heard from people in law enforcement who said that and felt that way. Former NYPD Commissioner Bratton, who's been on the show, spoke to us about that. I will also say there are others who said, look, there are deranged people that take a sort of inspiration from anything in the news or anything in politics. It is not a one-to-one. The vast majority of movements that are looking at police misconduct or that are holding protests are peaceful protests. They are not calling for violence. If anything, they repeatedly emphasize the opposite. So there isn't a clean or simple answer of saying X is caused by Y, but we can tell you that the killings and the ambushes are up.
Is there an example of a place that's dealing with this that has learned positive lessons? I mean, is Dallas that place? I mean, I remember the police chief coming out in the wake of that and essentially saying, hey, we've pioneered this community policing. He allowed those protests to go forward afterward. I mean, is there a place that's dealt with this and then, you know, moved forward in a productive way or not yet?
Yeah, I think there are a lot of parts of the country where crime is relatively low in contrast to Chicago, as you were mentioning at the top, Willie, and places where community policing works and where officers are speaking out and say they're part of protecting the community, that they are part of breaking down those barriers that are sometimes erected that make people feel like there it must be animosity in between. The other thing I'll note is, again, in the words of some of the folks we spoke to, the Zamarripas said they were completely overwhelmed by the community response, the visits they continue to get from police and military families, the size of the funeral. They said Patrick, who lost his life, they said, we know he's looking down, and he would have been blown away. Cause
all right, so that was from Morning Joe. That was from December 29th, 2016, Morning Joe. Name of that clip was New Stats Show a Deadly Year for Police. New Stats Show a Deadly Year for Police. Now, Huffington Post Black Voices had an article also. 2016 was a violent year for police, but there's still no war on cops. 2016 was a violent year for police, but there's still no war on cops. So you've heard FBI Director James Comey talk about a war on cops. You've heard other police chief things like this talk about a war on cops. The data suggests policing remains safer today than it has been in past decades. Okay? This does not mean that there are not dangers. This does not mean there are not threats. This is not in a way to try to minimize the 64 officers who were shot and killed and the even larger numbers of those who are injured on the job, who are shot on the job, who are stabbed. And you have officers who are killed because they're on the side of the road writing a ticket, attending to somebody, and they get hit by an oncoming car. They either get injured severely or there have been cases where they have been killed as well. Okay. Now, this article written by Nick Wing, W-I-N-G, for Huffington Post Black Voices, it says hundreds of protesters snaked their way through downtown Dallas one evening this past July. Emotions were running high following fatal police shootings of black men in Louisiana and Minnesota, incidents that were captured on video in graphic detail. The Dallas demonstrators called for an end to the bloodshed and for measures to increase accountability for police officers who kill civilians. Despite the tension, it was a peaceful event by all accounts. And it was, and that one was partly organized by a white Baptist minister. He's a young, looks like a millennial, younger Baptist minister. He helped organize that along with, you know, Black Lives Matter activists. Okay. So, then came a volley of gunfire and then another and another. By the end, a lone, gunman had fatally wounded 5 police officers and injured 9 others. The carnage stopped when police detonated a bomb carried by a robot, killing the suspect, who was a former member of the Army Reserves, who was discharged in 2015. He was reportedly not connected to any of the groups protesting that night. Now, the July 7th shooting was the deadliest single incident for U.S. law enforcement since September 11, 2001. Just 10 days later, a gunman shot and killed 3 police officers in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, in what authorities called another ambush-style attack. The two events highlighted a year in which violence against the police repeatedly dominated the news cycle. A total of 62 police officers were deliberately shot and killed while on the job in the U.S. and Puerto Rico this year, according to the Officer Down Memorial page, a website that independently tracks a broad range of data on law enforcement deaths. 2 other officers died after being intentionally struck by suspects in vehicles. So that gave a total of this probably where they got the 64 from the previous article from NBC News. Okay. The FBI's total for officers feloniously killed on duty in 2016 won't be released until mid-2017. But the unofficial total of 64 officer deaths constitutes the highest annual number since 2011. Okay. Now, this is not the highest number on record, but it's the highest number since 2011. Now, the 2 incidents in Dallas and Baton Rouge alone accounted for 12.5% of all officers intentionally killed this year. Any killing of a police officer is tragic. Yet a closer look at historical data shows that while this unofficial tally is above average for recent years, which were some of the safest in recent history, okay, when we take all things into consideration, we look at previous years, it is still far lower than the totals of the not so distant past, okay? Now, they show a chart here. There are far fewer police deaths now than in past decades. Because if we go back to, say, 1973, you had 134 police killings. If we go back and look at 2011, it spiked. You had somewhere around, 70 in 2011. Okay, now the overall trend likely won't soothe those law enforcement officials who have responded to mounting demands for police reform with claims that such scrutiny has put cops in peril. If you saw the interview with McCarthy, former superintendent of the Chicago Police Department, that aired on 60 Minutes on Sunday, He talked about the rise in killings in civilians, in the tragic violence in Chicago, 762 murders in 2015. We're going to talk about that story tomorrow, okay? Dealing with Chicago. But he talked about how many officers are pulling back, and we've seen an 80% decrease in the numbers of arrests, right, in certain areas. Now, keep in mind, this is not all of Chicago where these killings are taking place. This is basically the south side of Chicago. This is concentrated in African-American areas. This is not all of Chicago. And he talked about how officers fear being recorded on video, becoming the latest subject of a viral video, all different types of things like this. And you know, my contention is that if you're following the law and doing your job, you shouldn't have a fear of being recorded on video or not, if you're following the law and doing your job. Now, if you're used to getting away with violating people's rights, well, you shouldn't be a police officer unless you want to obey the law. But if you don't want to obey the law, that, I mean, but if you are going to obey the law, you shouldn't have a fear with doing your job. Because the activists are saying they want police officers to do their job. They don't want them to violate the law. They don't want police misconduct. They don't want harassment. They don't want coercing testimony out of people, falsifying records, things like this. Okay? So if you are doing your job and following the law, this shouldn't be a problem. Unless you're not used to doing that. Okay? And if that's the case, you shouldn't be a police officer. Right, so the overall trend. So some people, some police officers, and conservative media outlets argue that protest groups like Black Lives Matter, like the Black Lives Matter movement, have promoted violence against police officers, leading to a supposed "quote unquote" war on cops. Now, William J. Johnson, who's the executive director of the National Association of Police Organizations, he said, quote, "This year we've had more officers killed, particularly by gunfire, and more officers killed in ambush style attacks, and more cases where more than one officer is killed at the same time." Okay. Now, the article goes on to say there were more incidents this year in which multiple officers were killed by a single shooter. You had 8 in 2016 compared to 2 in 2015. You had 8 incidences in 2016 of multiple officers killed by a single shooter compared to only 2 incidences of this in 2015. But only 3 involved a clear ambush: Dallas, Baton Rouge, and a November incident in the Des Moines, Iowa area, in which 2 officers lost their lives. Now, Des Moines, Iowa, you know that was a white guy who did that. Now, a separate count by the National Law Enforcement Memorial Fund, the National Law Enforcement Memorial Fund, finds that a total of 21 officers died this year in ambush-style attacks. Although that's the highest number in more than 2 decades, nearly half of those fatalities came during the 3 events above: Dallas, Baton Rouge, and Des Moines, Iowa. Now, the rest of the fatal shootings in 2016 occurred during routine law enforcement activity, often while officers were serving warrants or responding to domestic disputes or other calls. Now, still, William J. Johnson, executive director of the National Association of Police Organizations, still William Johnson believes President Barack Obama is in part to blame. Now, listen to this, because see, this is where elections have consequences, and Donald Trump is very pro-police. Donald Trump does not want to acknowledge, and Mike Pence, VP-elect, do not want to acknowledge that implicit bias in policing is a problem. They were also endorsed by the Fraternal Order of Police, which is the largest police union in the country with 330,000 members. Now, even though all of the members did not vote for Donald Trump, there were some African-American members who said they were not voting for Donald Trump. They did not support the endorsement. Still, the Fraternal Order of Police presented a memo to President-elect Trump about what they want him to do in the first 100 days of his presidency. You remember we talked about this last week. You go back, listen to the archives, we dealt with this, right? And then check out the article from rawstory.com. National Police Union expects Trump to reverse the ban on racial profiling. Because one of the things that the Fraternal Order of Police want Donald Trump to do, hashtag not my president, they want him to reverse the 2003 federal ban on racial profiling that was issued by President George W. Bush. And these guidelines, President George W. Bush issued guidelines in July 2003, barring federal agents from using race or ethnicity as a factor in their investigations. Although the policy carved out, quote unquote, narrow circumstances in situations where federal agents were trying to, quote, identify terrorist threats and stop potential catastrophic attack, end quote. Okay, but the Fraternal Order of Police, they want Donald Trump in his first 100 days to reverse, quote, the broad Bush-era ban on racial profiling, end quote. And there's a list of other things they want, because I went and printed up the actual memo from the Fraternal Order of Police and went through and read through it, okay? Went through and read through it. Another thing they want him to do is to deprioritize implementation of some or all of the recommendations made by the president's task force on 21st century policing. Well, when you study that, you've had police departments who adopted some of those best practices that came out of that task force, and it's making a difference in the way they do policing. We saw in Dallas, because at the time that the ambush took place in Dallas, they also talked about that Dallas was one of the police departments that adopted some of those best practices, and they had seen a drastic reduction in the amount of murders and violent crimes in the city of Dallas. So why would the Fraternal Order of Police want President-elect Donald Trump, when he becomes president, if he decides to take the oath of office, why would they want him to reverse these things? Elections have consequences. This is what people have to understand. Okay. So William Johnson, who is the executive director of the National Association of Police Organizations, he believes President Barack Obama is in part to blame for what he sees as a chilling of relations between the police and the public. President Obama is partly to blame for this. President Obama didn't shoot Laquan McDonald 16 times and then lie about what happened. President Obama didn't shoot Walter Scott in the back and then tamper with evidence and lie about what happened. How do you blame President Obama for this? Article goes on to say, and that, Johnson said, has made the job of policing more dangerous. He said, quote, we're hopeful that with the new administration, they will be helpful in quelling this rising tide of violence against police, end quote. Now, see, Donald Trump's criminal justice reform program is stop and frisk and law and order. Law and order means lock up black people and protect white people. Protect white people, lock up African Americans. Okay. And stop and frisk, he's talking about violating civil rights of people. See, now notice, Donald Trump is not talking about implementing stop and frisk in white neighborhoods that suffer from the heroin epidemic and have all types of crimes tied to heroin. He's not talking about going doing stop and frisk in white areas. He's talking about doing that in African-American dominated areas where they have a large amount of crime. He's not talking about that. Very interesting. Okay, so William Johnson said, we're hopeful that the new administration will be helpful in quelling this rising tide of violence against police. Now, President-elect Donald Trump, who regularly jabbed at the Black Lives Matter movement during his campaign, has been an outspoken supporter of quote-unquote law and order. He's also repeatedly pushed the narrative that the police are under siege. Maybe he's a big fan of Steven Seagal's movies, because Steven Seagal had two movies, Under Siege, one and two, right? The Fraternal Order Police, the nation's largest union of rank-and-file officers, endorsed Donald Trump early this year. Some supporters of police reform argue that police officials are not painting an honest picture of the data. Some supporters of police reform argue that police officials are not painting an honest picture of the data. They suggest that the law enforcement community is seeking instead to win the public relations battle and push back against the current momentum for reform. But that may not be entirely fair either, according to some law enforcement researchers. Police officers may honestly believe their portrayal of the data because they, along with the rest of the public, are likely hearing about this sort of violence more often. Now, Philip Stinson is a criminologist at Ohio's Bowling Green State University. Okay. And Philip Stinson said, quote, in the past, most shootings by police officers, as well as shootings of police officers, were typically local or regional news events. But after Ferguson, Missouri, in the killing of Michael Brown, everyone is paying attention. So often, these incidents now become national and even international news events. We saw the killing of Philando Castile, the killing of Alton Sterling, the killing of Terrence Crutcher, the killing of Walter Scott, etc. They've become international, all right? And as you have more recordings with smartphones, with cell phones, with the combination of social media, they become international. Okay. Now, he said that Philip Stinson is a former police officer himself, and he said the hard data suggests that policing was no more dangerous in 2016 than it has ever been. And it's actually more dangerous in 1973, when you had about 146 police officers killed, than it was last year. It does not mean it's not a dangerous job. It does not mean that when it comes to danger, that there are not some legitimate concerns or grievances by police. But it also means that some things are just not true that are being postulated. And what's interesting is that they'll talk about Black Lives Matter, but they don't talk about crazy ass white men who are the majority of the ones killing police officers. So what's the cause of that? It's not Black Lives Matter. Are you trying to tell me these white men are so upset that African Americans are being shot down in the street by police officers, they're going shooting police officers? That's not why. So and why don't you see all this coverage of police shootings when it's white people killing police officers? You see more coverage when it's an African-American who shoots a police officer, especially if it's an African-American man. You see more coverage then than white people killing police officers. So Philip Stinson, who's a criminologist and a former police officer, he said the hard data suggests that policing was no more dangerous in 2016 than it has ever been. So he's saying, why are you saying there's a war on cops now? He said, quote, I don't buy the war on cops narrative, nor do I draw any conclusions from small changes in the numbers of officers killed over a few years. Policing in this country is violent. It is business as usual on the streets and in policing. Okay. So check out this article from Huffington Post Black Voices. We monitor about 35 different news sources on a daily basis. If you like the information we share here on the Michael M. Hotep Show and here on the African History Network, hey, visit our website, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. You can support us. You can purchase the DVDs we have there. I have 30 of my own lectures. We have documentaries there, Black Friday, different documentaries, Hidden Colors, things like that. And then also you could donate to the African History Network. Click on the yellow donate button right on the homepage of our website. Also click on the yellow donate button. Okay, one break. When we come back from break, we're going to hit this last story and then deal with this date in African-American history, and then we'll get out of here, and we'll be back tomorrow. We're going to talk about Chicago and the killings in Chicago, about 762 murders in Chicago, what's behind that. Shirley J. Carter in Philadelphia listening. Wendell Odin, Texas. Hey, if you want to bring me in to your city, if you're in Philadelphia, in Chicago, what have you, if you want to bring me in to do a presentation for your group or organization, visit theblackspeakers.com, theblackspeakers.com/Michael M. Hotep, I-M-H-O-T-E-P. /Michael M. Hotep. They're handling my national bookings now. TheBlackSpeakers.com. Okay. It's 2017. Time to start 2017 off right. Do you have insurance for you and your loved ones? Start the year off right and invest in the future of your family with life insurance today. Contact Yolanda Spivey of the Whitney Insurance Agency at 201-880-7179. 201-880-7179. Okay. Master P, who founded No Limit Records, Master P got a $10,000 inheritance from a life insurance policy left for him by his grandfather, and he turned that into a $250 million empire. What could our loved ones do? How could they fulfill their dreams if they had $50,000, $100,000, $200,000 to start out with, and we leave assets for our children as opposed to debt for our children? This is one of the main themes of the documentary Black Friday that I'm in, from director Rick Mathis and producer Dave Anderson. Dave is one of the producers. He's the founder of the Empowerment Radio Network. Okay. Master P said, my grandfather left me $10,000 from a life insurance policy that I turned into a $250 million empire. Are you going to leave assets for your loved ones, or are you going to leave debt for them? Contact Yolanda Spivey today at the Whitney Insurance Agency at 201-880-7179, 201-880-7179. Also visit their website, mwhitney.com, mwhitney, M as in Michael, mwhitney.com, W-H-I-T-N-E-Y, and also visit theblackinsurancenetwork.com, theblackinsurancenetwork.com. All right, welcome back to the Michael M. Hotep Show right here on the Empowerment Radio Network, where knowledge is power. All right, let's go to some of your comments here on Facebook. Willie Daniels said, what's the difference from a racist cop profiling and killing black men from a cop knowing who racists are, but now saying, but not saying a word? Well, the ones doing the, you have approximately 800,000 police officers in the country, approximately 18,500 law enforcement departments, the police departments. So it's estimated between 1 to 2% of the 800,000 are the ones who are the actual bad apples. So you're talking about between 8,000 and 16,000. They're the ones doing the actual killing. You have some who speak up, but they fear retaliation, and many of them are retaliated against as well. If you go watch the story from 60 Minutes Sunday night. That was Sunday. What was Sunday? The first, from the January 1st, when they interviewed former Superintendent McCarthy. They also interviewed an African American man who's a former Chicago police officer, and he was a whistleblower, and he talked about the backlash he got, the intimidation he got for standing up and doing the right thing. All right, now, Milani Renee Briscoe said, start the year off properly. TotalLifeChanges.com, Milani Briscoe. Hey, Milani, email us at customerservice@AfricanHistoryNetwork.com, customerservice@AfricanHistoryNetwork.com if you want to advertise with us. All right, now, Faith on Facebook, Afolabi. Faith said, I believe some of the Chicago murders are due to civilians, but I strongly believe that the federal government are purposely staging killings to harvest organs and population control. 700, well, what evidence are you citing for this, Faith? What evidence are you citing? If they're trying to do population control through killing people, that, I mean, that's... I mean, do you know how many African Americans there are in Chicago? Approximately 1 million. the approximately 1 million African Americans in Chicago. So, I mean, whatever this are you citing for this? I've heard that before. Nobody's presented any evidence to me. Now, Carol McCurdy on Facebook said, what I've noticed about the shooting deaths in Chicago is that these multiple shooting deaths are occurring on holidays. Well, one of the reasons why is because that's a time when people have more time on their hands. They don't have to go to work, don't have to go to school. They have more, people have more time on their hands. Usually, and the, another thing is that during the holidays, people are going to dinner with, they're congregating with family. And a lot of times you have arguments that break out among family members or friends are over along with family. So more people are gathering together during the holidays also. And you have arguments that break out, etc. Okay. Okay. We have a weak signal here on Facebook. So hopefully this will clear up. She said, I noticed multiple deaths on Memorial Day, July 4th. Yeah. Well, that's normal. You're going to see that. You'll see that trend across the country because you have people congregating together. You have people during the holidays, you have people congregating together, going to holiday parties, going to family dinners over at family members' houses, things like this. So you're going to have that. That's not specific to Chicago. That's across the country. You'll also see increases in the number of people going to the hospital during those holidays as well. People eating things they should not eat, diabetics eating things they should not eat, people getting into arguments, fights, getting stabbed, getting shot, getting beat up, etc. That is not specific to Chicago. That is nationwide. Joseph Strouder says Chicago murder rates are the result of zero economic opportunities or empowerment within black neighborhoods. Similar statistics can be found within black neighborhoods throughout America. That's part of it, but that's not the only thing. Did he mention Dr. Sebi? I did not mention Dr. Sebi. Joseph Strouder says some same arguments can be made regarding the tensions between black neighborhoods and law enforcement. Okay, Janetta Williams said the Fraternal Order Police is the biggest gang in blue. Carol McCurdy said we knew what law and order meant when Nixon said it, and we know what it means now. They have the same playbook. Well, the problem is a lot of our people, especially a lot of millennials, who either didn't vote or wanted to vote for Jill Stein or Gary Johnson or some nonsense like that. A lot of millennials, they didn't know what law and order meant because they hadn't really studied Richard Nixon. So they didn't know what law and order meant, and they didn't know that was a throwback to Richard Nixon, and that was the platform that Richard Nixon won on in 1968, law and order. Okay, so some other people who we lost in 2016, Nicholas Caldwell. Nicholas Caldwell was an original member of the R&B group The Whispers. And Nicholas Caldwell was an award-winning songwriter and producer credited with the group's most widely acclaimed ballads like Lady, Say Yes, and Are You Going My Way. He died January 5th in San Francisco at the age of 71. So Nicholas Caldwell, I remember when that happened, and Whispers are huge here in Detroit. Otis Clay. We lost Otis Clay January 8th, 2016. He was a soul singer and a member of the Blues Hall of Fame. He was a Blues Hall of Fame inductee, member of the Blues Hall of Fame. With hits such as Trying to Live My Life Without You and The Only Way Is Up, and also She's About a Mover. He died in Chicago January 8th. He was 73 years old. Let's see here. We also lost Monty Irvin. Monty Irvin was one of the first African-American players to be signed professionally. He was a Negro League player, and he also played in the Mexican League. And he was a member of the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame. So he was a Negro League, Mexican League, and Major League Baseball Hall of Famer. He played with the Newark Eagles, the New York Giants, and Chicago Cubs. He died on January 11th, 2016, in Houston, Texas, age 96. So we also have from 2016, we have, let's see here, just a minute, Clarence Blowfly Reed. Clarence Blowfly Reed. He was a musician, a soul singer, songwriter, producer, and rapper who also performed under the alias Blowfly. He died January 17th at the age of 76 in Lauderdale, Lauderdale Lakes, Florida. Okay, just a second here. And a lot of people were shocked when this happened. Maurice White, who was a co-founder of the legendary group Earth, Wind, and Fire. He was a singer and member of the Songwriters Hall of Fame. He won 6 Grammy Awards and also won an NAACP Hall of Fame Award. He won 4 American Music Awards and a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. And Earth, Wind, and Fire was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as well. Maurice White was 74 years old when he died February 4th, 2016 in Los Angeles, California. Then we have Vanity. Now, we were all shocked by this. February 15th, Denise Vanity Matthews passed away. I wrote an article about this also. She was better known as Vanity. She was the lead singer of Vanity 6. We all remember the hit Nasty Girls. Nasty Girls Dance, Dance, Dance. That's right. Pleased to meet you. Still won't tell you my name. I'm not going to sing it, but I remember that when it came out. I think it was 1981. Nasty Girls. I was in sixth grade. She was a protege of the music legend Prince and former member of the girl group Vanity 6. She died in Fremont, California, February 15th, age 57. And she was fine back in the day also. Her and Prince were both 57 when they passed away. Let's see. Maya Young, recorded as the first black transgender woman killed this year. The 25-year-old was found on the street in Philadelphia on February 20th after being stabbed multiple times. Young died later at the hospital. Okay, 25 years old. All right. Next, it was just in here. It popped up. Who is this? Marquinton Sandlin and Keisha Michael. According to the family, on February 21st, the couple had wrapped up a night out and pulled over on the side of the road to take a nap. Inglewood, California police responded to a call about a suspicious vehicle around 3 a.m. The details are not clear as to why, but the officers shot and killed Michael, 31, and Sandlin, 32. Okay. Let's see here. Let's get one more in before we have to get out of here. All right. We're on break right now. We'll be back in 3 minutes. You listen to the Michael M. Hotep Show right here on the Empowerment Radio Network, where knowledge is power. On Facebook, Linda Howard said so many black people are uninformed of what's going on. Even after the election, we tend to let our guards down. We need to stay alert and informed at all times. Wake up, black people. Oops. Sorry, hold on. Wake up, black people. Hold on. Oops. All right, hold on. I accidentally blocked somebody. Didn't mean to do that. Sorry. Hit the wrong button. Let me see if I can fix this. All right, just a minute here. All right. We'll have to fix it later. Okay, who else we have? Yolanda Spivey, blackinsurancenetwork.com. Ethan Lucan said, you hear what Lil Wayne said. What did Lil Wayne say, Ethan? Dion Richardson said Malcolm X, and said chickens always come home to roost. Why were they beating you and sicking dogs on you, chickens? Okay. All right. Okay, we'll be back in just a minute. Listen to the Michael Imhotep Show right here on the Empowerment Radio Network, where knowledge is power. We'll be back in just a minute here. We'll be back from break in 1 minute. We're going to talk more about Chicago tomorrow and the killings there and some of what's behind that. Justice, how you doing on Facebook? Okay. Also, in 2016, we lost Tony Burton. Now, Tony Burton was in the Rocky films. He was in five of the Rocky films, I think it was. He was the bald-headed brother. He was the trainer of Apollo Creed, and then became a trainer of Rocky Balboa. He was an actor, comedian, and professional boxer and football player himself. Best known for his role as Tony Duke Evers, Apollo Creed's trainer in the Rocky films. Tony Burton died on February 25th, 2016 at the age of 78 in Menifee, California. Let's see here. We also lost Gil Hill. Now, Gil Hill lived in Detroit. I met Gil Hill a couple of times. He was known as Inspector Todd, best known as Inspector Todd in the Beverly Hills Cops films. He was the superior to Eddie Murphy in the Beverly Hills Cops movies, Axel Foley. He was a former member of the Detroit City Council. He was a prominent police detective. He was actually really a former police detective in the Detroit Police Department. He also ran for mayor. And he ran for mayor against Kwame Kilpatrick back in about 2000 or something like that. And Kwame Kilpatrick won, became the youngest mayor in the history of this country. We know what happened after that. It's pretty much downhill from there. But Gil Hill died February 29th, 2016 in Detroit. He was 84 years old. It was shocking when we got the news about Gil Hill. Let's see here. Okay. Try to get one more in here. This is from theroot.com. Lee Andrews. Lee Andrews was the lead singer of the Philadelphia doo-wop group, Lee Andrews and the Hearts, and is the father of the Roots drummer Amir Questlove Thompson. This was Questlove's father. Lee Andrews passed away on March 16th at the age of 79. Okay, so he has, Questlove has those genes, I guess, those musical genes. We also lost Trey Walker. Trey Walker was the 23-year-old Baltimore Ravens cornerback. He died in a dirt bike accident in Liberty City, Florida on March 18th when he collided with an SUV. Trey Walker, he was 23 years old. He played in 8 games with the Baltimore Ravens during the 2015 season. Okay. All right. Okay. So we'll get this last one. David Smurl, S-M-Y-R-L. David Smurl was an Emmy Award-winning actor. He was best known for his role as Mr. Handford, the retired firefighter who ran and owned Hooper's store on Sesame Street. Okay, this was, I guess, after Mr. Hooper died. This was an African-American. When you see him, you remember seeing him in different roles. I think he was on the episode of The Cosby Show as well. He died March 22nd. At the Lankanu Medical Center outside of Philadelphia. He was 80 years old. Mr. David Smurl. I never knew his name, but he was on Sesame Street, I take it, after Mr. Hooper died. So if you don't know who Mr. Hooper is on Sesame Street, you're probably really young. That was back in the early days of Sesame Street, back in the 70s. All right, so we have this other story from TheRoot.com. It's a good story also. And this deals with the Nigerian schoolgirls, okay, who were kidnapped. And you have a African-American billionaire who said that he's going to pay for their education. Okay, so let's pull this story up here just a minute. Just give me a minute here. All right. And on Facebook, Samantha Aline said, not very clear picture and can't hear. Can you hear me now? I should be able to hear now. Can anybody hear me? Are we coming in clearly? Can you see clearly? Ann Murray said, what's up from Maryland? Tammy Dawson said, hello. Okay, so you have Robert Smith. Robert Smith is an African-American billionaire. He's worth about $2.5 billion. He made his fortune in private equity, and he's offered to sponsor the education of at least 24 young women from the embattled community destroyed by Boko Haram, okay? And this article is from December 30th, 2016. Okay, so he's offered to sponsor the education of 24 girls from the Chibok community, including the 21 girls who were released from Boko Haram captivity in October. This was reported by Forbes, Forbes.com. Now, private equity titan Robert Smith will pay for the young women to attend American University of Nigeria, AUN, American University of Nigeria, YOLA, and will pay for tuition, room, board, and other related expenses at a cost of $5,000 to $11,000 a year. Now, Forbes.com or Forbes magazine currently estimates that Robert Smith, who's 54 years old and the founder of Vista Equity Partners, they estimate his net worth at $2.5 billion. He's very low key. Okay, people know about Oprah, they don't know about Robert Smith. We talked about Robert Smith here on the show before. Now, Garber Shehu, S-H-E-S-H-E-H-U, the senior special assistant on media and publicity to Nigeria's president, announced the plans last week, Tuesday. Okay. Now, Robert, quote, Smith has offered to pay for the education of the 21 released girls through negotiations and is offering to take responsibility for all the others who will hopefully be eventually set free, end quote. Now, radical Islamic militants from Boko Haram kidnapped 276 female high school students from the government secondary school in the town of Chibok in Borno State, Nigeria, in April 2014. Since their capture, 57 of the young women have escaped or been freed. But there are still 219 girls believed to be in Boko Haram's custody. Okay, you can check out this article. We've posted it on our fan page, the African History Network. We'll post it again. Black billionaire will pay for education of kidnapped Chibok girls. C-H-I-B-O-K. That's from TheRoot.com. All right, this date in African American history, January 3rd. The NAACP report issued on this date in 1947, called the year 1946 one of the grimmest years in NAACP history. So 1946 was the year after World War II ended. It said the report blasted the nation's lack of response to the wave of lynchings and reports of horrendous crimes against black veterans. There were reports of veterans murdered with blowtorches and having their eyes gouged out. So we really need to study what happened when these African-American men came back to the U.S. after risking their lives fighting for the U.S. overseas. And they said they weren't going to come back to the same segregation they were dealing with when they left. So the NAACP was involved in this fight. The NAACP report issued on this date, January 3rd in 1947, called the year 1946, quote, one of the grimmest years, end quote, in NAACP history. The report blasted the nation's lack of response to the wave of lynchings and reports of horrendous crimes against black veterans. There were reports of veterans murdered with blow torches and having their eyes gouged out. And a lot of white men took exception and were offended when they saw these African-American men coming back in uniforms with their stripes on, you know, with their private stripes or whatever, with come back in uniform. They took offense to this. Now, Adam Clayton Powell Jr. was elected chairman of the House of Education and Labor Committee. This date, 1961. This date in 1966, Robert C. Henry assumed the office of mayor of Springfield, Ohio. This date in 1966. Now, Robert C. Henry was Ohio's first African-American mayor. This date in 1966, North Carolina attorney Floyd B. McKissick was named National Director of the Congress of Racial Equality Corps. This date in 1969, after being reelected to a second term, Representative Adam Clayton Powell Jr. was seated by Congress. This date in 1969. This date in 1984, the Reverend Jesse Jackson Sr. secured the release of Black Navy Lieutenant Robert Goodman. On this date in 1984, 1 month earlier, Robert Goodman, a Navy Lieutenant Robert Goodman, was shot down over Damascus, Syria, and was held hostage. This date in 1985, Leontine Price, world-renowned opera singer, made her historic last performance at the Metropolitan Opera as Aida. This date in 1985. And this date in 2008, Barack Obama, Senator Barack Obama, won the Iowa caucus. You can read more facts about this date in African-American history and African history at Yenoba.com, Y-E-N-O-B-A, Yenoba.com. Hey, be sure to visit our website, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. We have a lot of information there for you. All of my DVD lectures are there. I have 30 of them. We have bundle packs. You can get my lectures in bundle packs also. We have Hidden Colors documentaries, Black Friday, Urban Kryptonite. I recommend a reading list of books there also. We have video clips, etc. And remember, coming up Saturday, January 14th, 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. at the Jungle Juice Bar, I will be doing two presentations. The first one, the Distortion of the Legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. The second one, Malcolm X, Five Decades Later, Why Is He Still Relevant? And it's a free event, donations accepted. Come on out, 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. Jungle Juice Bar, 14929 Charlevoix Street in Grosse Pointe Park, Michigan, right across the street from Detroit. And if you want me to, if you're in the Detroit area, if you want me to speak at your event or what have you, email me at info@AfricanHistoryNetwork.com, info@AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. If you're out of the Detroit area, out of the Michigan area, go to theblackspeakers.com/Michael M. Hotep, theblackspeakers.com/Michael M. Hotep, okay? All right, so be sure to share this broadcast on your own Facebook page. Invite your friends to tune in also. We'll have the audio podcast of this show available tonight. All the audio podcasts, you can listen to them at AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. Right on the home page, click on the link, listen to podcasts of the Michael M. Hotep Show. Listen to podcasts of the Michael M. Hotep Show. Hey, remember, we focus on educating, empowering, and inspiring people of African descent throughout the diaspora and around the world, because right knowledge corrects wrong behavior. It's not over till we win. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Peace. Up on the mantle, so don't try to adjust your radio, don't change your channel. We're taking down the glittering lights and just light a candle. Come on. He said, I don't see you at the club. I said, I don't see you at the bank. People gotta live their life and do their thing. Let me live, let me breathe, let me be me. He said, I don't see you at the club. I said, I don't see you at the bank. People gotta live their life and do their thing.
Let me live, let me breathe, let me be me. He said, I'll see you at the club. I said.